folks, welcome. Bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadee karab, guten tag, jiao, weevi, va, kak, dang, half a day, jai, janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace, how, go vegan. From the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated McNugget pharmaceutical, vivisection prison, killitary industrial core, poor nation. In the cheese-covered post-constitutional, bankster bankrupt, corruptocracy, mocracy, criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, foodborne in the USA, NRA, NSA. I say, home of Uncle Salmonella, where they sure eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Inexplicably broadcasting for 12 years now, as heard on Air America and Clear Channel and CBS radio stations, now nationally syndicast on the Genesis Communications Network, now nationally syndicated, or syndicast, I guess, if we want to make up new words, which we do all the time. And we've expanded the show to 2 hours, and it was when I first started doing this program many years ago, a potential sponsor said to me, well, after two or three shows, I mean, what is there to discuss, right? Well, we haven't gotten to anything yet because vegan issues are connected to everything. Today we're standing in solidarity with the Justice for Trayvon observances that are happening around the country this weekend, as we always stand week after week for justice for the innocent victims of violence. And here, we call for an end to injustice, not only across racial and gender and sexual orientation lines, but we extend our call for justice for our brothers and sisters of all species, who all want to live. We all want to live. We all want to avoid pain. We all don't want to be killed, right? And that's for all species. And there are reasons why the wife and son of Martin Luther King Jr. became vegans, why Cesar Chavez was vegan, why Dennis Kucinich and Cindy Sheehan are vegan. I mean, I really can't disentangle the isms. You know, they all seem so intertwined. Racism, speciesism, sexism, speciesism, homophobia-ism, speciesism. Nobody wants to be treated like an animal, right? Nobody wants to be treated like an animal. Right there, the basis of speciesism. And now, how are young black people to be treated in states with stand your ground laws, thanks to ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, responsible for stand your ground laws and also, pushing ag gag laws so that people who, take pictures or videotape what happens to animals on farms and in other places where animals are exploited. Those people become criminals and labeled terrorists. Coming up on today's program, we're going to talk to Amy Meyer, the first person in the country to be arrested under an ag gag law. We'll talk to her about ALEC and what happened, and it's really, really scary because, your right to know is well, what's happening to all our rights, including your right to know. Now we have the very touchy issue of racism emerging again, which it does once in a while on the national scene. It's like everything, it's supposed to be a secret. It's surprising to see that President Obama speaking about it a little on the subject earlier this week, considering, with him, everything is a secret, huh? Since he declared the whole U.S. government a secret. As you know, all laws are secret right now. Courts are secret. Law enforcement, we don't know who they are, right? secret. But we will let you know if you do break any laws. That'll be a secret too. But if you wake up in indefinite military detention without an attorney, that just means you did break one of the secret laws, and we can't tell you which one, though. Ask the whistleblower if you can find him or her in some secret prison. And, you know, listening to Obama talking about some of his personal incidents, kind of makes me think in terms of, you know, these days, well, my profiling is basically look what happened a year ago this weekend with James Holmes, the Colorado movie killer. He was a vivisector. Yes, that was his occupation, to do cruel things to little animals. And it seems to happen that every time there is some sort of serial killer, some deviant, it starts with animal abuse. I just watched, see how much time I have on my hands, I watched an old interview with Stone Phillips and Jeffrey Dahmer. And Jeffrey Dahmer talks about how it all started with animals, and, other species, and then leads to abuse of humans also. So, if I know that somebody is a vivisector, that's my immediate, raises immediate fears. I don't know if I should stand my ground or run. All the animals should run. But that's one form of effective profiling, if someone's a vivisector. And I'm sorry to say that China Southern Airlines is part of that exploitation, cruel to animals, and exploits them for profit. In the last day or so, China Southern Airlines is guilty of transporting primates to Chicago, destination Covance Corporation, and vivisection. Run for your life if you're near Covance, huh? Nobody's safe. That Covance would be in Wisconsin. These poor primates are headed to cruel pharmacological and chemical experimentation. 72 crates of prisoners, hundreds of long-tailed macaque monkeys shipped to O'Hare Airport. O'Hare should be ashamed of itself. It shouldn't allow that to happen, huh? And then on to Covance in Madison, Wisconsin. The Chicago phone number for China Southern Airlines to express your displeasure is 773-601-8800. 773-601-8800. And, the email in China, to ask China Southern Airlines to stop transporting animals to vivisection, it's sunpeng@csair.com. That's sun as in what's shining in the sky, sunpeng@csair.com. And, that's it. If you see a profile, I'm profiling the vivisectors right now. That's all I can say. And it's kind of interesting, you know, what Obama was saying about his personal experience. Though I suppose now, if as he mentioned, if he were followed around in a department store, I think people would probably just be concerned about how many drones he might be ordering and putting on his credit card there, or if, you know, people get concerned when Obama approaches them, they might be clutching their cell phones and trying to lock it so that he doesn't get all the records of every phone call you've ever made, every recording of, you know, everyone to whom you've ever spoken. And of course, the N-word will not be mentioned, N as in NSA, but what we should talk about is, you know, what is a very serious threat to the African American population, which then becomes a threat to the African population, and that is the health problems that, you know, young people like Trayvon and those who don't come across a monster like a George Zimmerman face premature death as a result of the Ronald McDonalds of the world, the Wendy's, the Kills Jr., the Popeye's Fried Chicken, you know, all of those. So the population now of African Americans, 43.9 million, 13.6% of the U.S. population. The Centers for Disease Control talks about health disparities between African Americans and other racial and ethnic populations being striking. And very apparent in life expectancy, death rates, infant mortality, and other measures of health status and risk conditions. Let me see if I can scroll along here. For example, it says here, health disparities. The CDC Health Disparities and Inequalities Report, 2011, provides analysis on an ongoing basis. It says that African-American women and men, for example, 45 to 74 years of age, in 2006 had the largest death rates from heart disease and stroke compared with the same age women and men of other racial and ethnic populations. From 2005 to 2008, people with the largest prevalence of hypertension were 65 years and older African-American adults, U.S.-born adults, adults with less than a college education, and those with public health insurance, 64 years and younger, diabetes, obesity, or a disability compared with their counterparts, all really just the disparity is incredible. The health conditions in the black community, and a lot of this does have to do with diet, consumption of meat, dairy, fish, and eggs. The really great African-American doctor, Dr. Milton Mills, calls what African-Americans eat today slave food, plantation food. So does Dr. Antetokounmpo of Ethiopia. So does John Sally. So, we have to move toward health and community gardens and, you know, doing the right thing. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. We'll continue with Amy Meyer on Animal Gag. Animal Ag, Animal Gag. Animal Gag. Ag Gag. That's it. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. You can become a sponsor and advertise your vegan and cruelty-free products and services. Email me. It's bob@goveganradio.com. You can also make a donation on our website where you find hundreds of free archives from our 12 years of broadcasting. That is, of course, goveganradio.com. Well, today we are going to talk to Amy Meyer, who is an animal advocate in Utah, normally in campaigns for veganism and against vivisection and foie gras. She's a volunteer at the Ching Farm Rescue and Sanctuary, and also has the distinction of being the first to be arrested under some of the unique new legislation, this unique post-constitutional legislation called Ag-Gag or Ag-Gag laws. Ag usually does make me gag when I think about eating animals, and right now it seems like we're expected to have these laws shoved down our throat, and much to the detriment of the Constitution. Make sure that the animals continue to be oppressed, and those who want to speak out for them. Amy, welcome to Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. How are you today?
Bob, I'm great.
Well, thanks for being with us today. So, tell us what happened. How were you arrested under this new legislation, an ag-gag law? How'd that happen?
Sure. Sure. Well, it was just one day in February on my way home from volunteering at the Ching Farm Rescue and Sanctuary. I decided to drive by the slaughterhouse that I see every week from the interstate on my way to volunteer. I decided to see what the other side of the building looked like. So I drove around to the other side of the building on a public road and pulled over on the road. And I was shocked at what I could see. I could see cows being led into the building, and once they reached the building, they were trying to fight their way out. They could see what was about to happen to them. And on the other side of the building, you could see flesh just being spewed just every few seconds out of the building. You could see piles of horns everywhere. It was just appalling what you could see. It was right here in our backyard. And then I saw a front-end loader come out of the building hauling away a downed cow. It was obvious it was still alive. It was moving its head. So I started to videotape at that point. It looked to me like an act of animal cruelty. And it took it to a part of the property where I couldn't see exactly. It was behind a truck, but there was no other building, and returned without the cow. Within minutes, a manager drove up with his truck and confronted me and told me what I was doing was illegal. And I corrected him and said this was a public easement. I never trespassed. I've been on public property the whole time. And he then called the police, which arrived just a couple minutes later in full force. About 7 cop cars arrived, and they conducted an hour-long investigation and questioned me for a long time, questioned the manager a little bit. And at that point, they actually said I was free to go and that they would screen me for charges with the prosecutor. And about 10 days later, when I found out, I was being charged under the ag law.
So it didn't happen on the scene. You weren't detained at the scene when the police arrived. And 7 police cars for one person taking pictures or video. That's quite a display of force there.
Yeah, I was surprised at first. I later learned that the owner of the facility is also the mayor of Draper, which could have a reason why cops would want to respond so quickly.
Aha, uh-huh, the connections there. And then, yeah. And then you were called 10 days later or visited by police? What happened?
I actually started receiving solicitation letters from attorneys. And then I called the court to see if I was in fact being charged with a crime, and they confirmed. And I later received a letter from the court saying I was being charged.
That's interesting. So this is arrest by mail. Nobody has to come and handcuff you or take you away. It's just it seems kind of strange that it's all happening by correspondence. Huh? So were you asked to come in? Were you asked to come into some Homeland Security office or Utah Security office, or what did you have to do?
No, it was just, I was just charged. So I had a pretrial conference set up that I actually did go to. I contacted a local lawyer right away, and then we had a pretrial conference.
Okay. We have to take a break, and then we'll continue our discussion with Amy Meyer, who was arrested, the first person arrested under these unconstitutional, horrendous ag-gag laws. And we will continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. You can stalk me on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio. You can be my superficial friend if you find me as Bob Linden, or feed my ego by becoming a fan at Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook also. Today we're talking to Amy Meyer, who is an animal advocate in Utah. She told us that she... when did this happen, this incident, Amy?
This was February 8th.
February 8th. So you were just minding your own business on public property, videotaping a slaughterhouse activities. You were approached by the police. Nothing happened. You weren't arrested. Then 10 days later, you were introduced to the world of ag gag law.
Correct.
What did you learn? You must have been shocked, from the start. You didn't do this to test the constitutionality of these laws, did you? You were just...
No, not at all. I was well aware of the law. I had tried to fight it when it was a bill, asked my legislator not to vote for this. So I was aware of the law, and I was aware that I wouldn't be committing a crime if I stayed on public property. Utah's ag gag law says... you can be charged under the ag gag law if you trespass onto their property and then take video or photographs. But as long as you stay on public property, we haven't gone that far down the road yet. That is still legal in this country. So I thought, this is fine. What I'm doing is absolutely fine. There's no way that they would have any issue with this. And I even encouraged the manager when he approached. I said, I don't care if you call the cops, that's fine. They can come and tell me that this is public land and I'm free to be here. No intention to challenge it at that point.
Okay. And then, so 10 days later, you were charged with a violation. Where did that stand? What did you do? What went through your mind and what did you do to address it?
I was... certainly shocked. I couldn't believe that it was happening. And, of course, I thought there's no way that they can win this. I even have video evidence. But, of course, in a court of law with a jury, as we've seen, anything is possible. So it was still a little intimidating that you can face up to 6 months in jail. It's a Class B misdemeanor here. So there's a local attorney that helps animal advocates a lot. With this sort of thing, I contacted him right away, and we went to the pretrial conference and handed over my video evidence to the prosecutor on that day. And about 10 days later is when Will Potter wrote a story about it on his blog, greenisthenewred.com. And the next day, the charges were dropped.
Uh-huh. Okay, so we're talking about ag gag laws. Apparently, since 2010, there have been such laws passed in Arkansas, South Carolina, Missouri, Iowa, and where you are in Utah. And such ag gag laws have been introduced in 19 states. They've been defeated in 12 states, if my math is still correct. And you know where these laws have been. Starting, the source of what's happening with these laws, the ag gag law, Amy?
Yes, well, they're certainly being pushed by the meat, dairy, and egg industries who know their cruel and often criminal practices can't stand the light of day, and rather than improve conditions on factory farms and slaughterhouses, corporate agriculture is pressuring lawmakers to help, keep their dirty secrets hidden behind closed doors. And also, I know that Alec is responsible for writing a lot of these bills and what these bills are modeled after.
Alec is this lunatic fringe, the American Legislative Exchange Council that's really made up of lobbyists and legislators. And they have these model bills, just like we can thank Alec for the Stand Your Ground and what happened to Trayvon Martin in Florida. There are these model bills. It's not really a secret. Alec has a website, alec.org. And if you look at, the model under which you were arrested, they call it the Animal and Ecological Terrorism Act, as their model on here. And they have some definitions about, animal activities. It said, animal activities means any activity involving the use of animals or animal parts to include hunting, fishing, trapping, traveling, camping, production, preparation of or processing of food or food products, clothing, garment manufacturing, medical or other research, entertainment, recreation, retail, agriculture, biotechnology, or any other services involving the use of animals, including the sale of any products therein. That pretty much covers the entire U.S. economy. I don't think you can take any more pictures or videos, can you? I mean, it's really insane. Oh, and an animal facility includes any vehicle, building, structure, research facility, nature preserve, or other premises where an animal is lawfully kept, handled, housed, exhibited, bred, or offered for sale, to include a zoo, rodeo, circus, amusement park, hunting preserve, and horse and dog event. So they're really stacking it up against animal advocates, really, here, you know?
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
So what's happening now? And by the way, it does have under prohibited acts, if I can see. It was trying to see where, well, as I, let's see. Well, I'm looking for this in their model law here. What's your status right now? Where do you stand with your case?
Oh, the charges were dropped on April 30th. It was without prejudice, so technically they could bring the charges back for the next 2 years, although I would highly doubt that would happen. They saw my video evidence where it shows that I'm on public land, and certainly it did not look good in the public eye for them to come after me the way that they did. But the law, unfortunately, does still exist in Utah. It has not been taken off the books. It could, like, this could still happen to someone else, and it certainly would happen to anyone who tried to be an undercover investigator or whistleblower.
Yes, it says, you know, one of the prohibited acts, entering an animal or research facility to take pictures by photograph, video, camera, or other means with the intent to commit criminal activities or defame the facility or its owner. So you can't make the slaughterhouse owner look bad for what he's doing to the cows there, basically. That's protected. Do you have any intention of suing because of your arrest, or suing related to this situation?
Well, there's not a whole lot that I could sue over, since I wasn't technically arrested. I couldn't do, like, a false arrest type thing because I was not arrested. I was only charged. However, I would say that the Animal Legal Defense Fund story just came out today is bringing together several people, including myself, to try to bring a constitutional challenge to the law.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is serious. I mean, we as compassionate people are concerned about showing the people the cruelty that happens on farms. And it's all farms. It's not just factory farms. It's family farms. It's any farm with animals. But these are also public health issues and environmental issues. The public can't be protected on those. There's no video allowed for that. Why do I feel that Utah has a lot of animal advocacy activism going on that seems strange to people, but there seems to be a lot on behalf of animals in Utah? Why is that? Or is that?
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. Salt Lake City in particular has a huge animal advocacy movement. We have a lot of vegans here, very vegan-friendly city, especially for our size. I think a lot of it stems from, like, the straight edge movement in the 90s. That was very big in Utah. A lot of people became vegan out of that movement. And they just sort of stayed. Salt Lake City is a bit of a kind of like a counterculture to the rest of Utah all around. And Utah is a huge agriculture state. So that one way to kind of be counterculture for especially a lot of young people is to boycott animal cruelty.
Mm-hmm. Some people listening now in our nationally syndicated program may not know what straight edge movement means. What does that mean?
Oh, sure. Well, it was largely a music scene still around, but it just straight edge people do not, they don't do any drugs, or, you know, don't try to not put any poisons in their body, from my best understanding. No drugs, no alcohol. And for many, that included no animals and boycotting cruelty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how did are you from Utah yourself?
I'm actually from Wyoming, but I moved to Utah to go to school.
Okay. And how long have you been vegan?
I've been vegan for 7 or 8 years.
Great. And how did that happen to somebody in Wyoming and Utah?
I was the only vegetarian in my town, as far as I knew, in Wyoming. I watched PETA's Meet Your Meat video online, and what I thought was shocking, especially coming from an area where you see cows, out on land. I thought that's just how all animals were, and the chickens must just be in some other state roaming around. I had no idea when I was in high school what was happening to animals, and as soon as I found out about their conditions, I decided I could not support anyone to do those horrendous things.
Mm-hmm. And you volunteer at the Ching Sanctuary?
I do, yes. It's a great place that advocates for farm animals and spreads, and advocates for a vegan diet and does outreach and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about the cuisine in Utah, Salt Lake City area. Any favorite vegan hangouts or places? What's good if we were just coming to visit now in Salt Lake City?
Oh, there's just hard to count the number of places you can go. Frisch is a great fresh place to eat that's all vegan. Vertical Diner is a great all-vegan diner. Stages Cafe. There's so many all-vegan places that are really fantastic.
Terrific. Okay, well, we're just out of time. Amy Meyer, I want to thank you for being with us today and doing the good work for the animals. Thanks for being with us today on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden.
Thank you, Bob.
It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. You know, earlier we were talking about the devastation that meat, dairy, fish, and eggs bring to the African-American population here. And ironically, by continuing to eat those animal products, in turn does damage back in Africa to where snow caps aren't there. Lakes are drying up. I mean, it's just, I talked to my good friend, Dr. Antena Roba from Ethiopia, who's actually an emergency room physician in Houston. And he sees the devastation here on health. And then he goes back to Africa and he sees the devastation that meat, dairy, fish, and eggs cause, in the environment there. You do realize, as we've mentioned on this program so often, that meat, dairy, fish, and eggs are responsible for 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions. So you can combine all human activity together, and it doesn't add up to the damage that causes climate change more than the appetite for decomposing corpses and the secretions of animals. So, and remember, a vegan only needs 10,000 gallons of water to grow his or her food in a year. And a flesh eater requires 320,000 gallons. So how do we share resources when only one meat eater, so-called meat eater, can be fed compared to 32 vegans? And, we want to move away from animal products. Then let's just say J-E-L-L, no, okay? And say no to gelatin. You know, gelatin is derived by boiling skin and bones and hide and hooves, connective tissue of animals, including cows and pigs. Traditionally, horses are used also, and you find gelatin and a lot of products. A lot of manufacturers have moved away from gelatin capsules, but it's in yogurt and ice cream and sour cream, cottage cheese, and canned hams and marshmallows. And then that favorite jiggly snack, J-E-L-L. No, if you want to say no to Jell-O and still have, the delicious, cool, jiggly, tasty snack that your kids will love, it's time to move over to Cool Cups, America's number one selling all-natural gelatin-free snacks. And the kids will love them. They're really tasty. They're available in three delicious flavors, orange, peach mango, and black cherry. And they come in single serving cups and are packaged in four packs, so you can pick them up. They are gluten-free, GMO-free, fat-free, 100% vegan, and naturally low in calories. And I recommend that you learn about gelatin by going to the website cool-cups.net/gelatin. Maybe we can get the kids to sing along so that you remember that it is cool-cups.net/gelatin, and you do not want to be giving the kids gelatin anymore. You can also find Cool Cups available at Viva La Vegan Grocery, the world's largest vegan grocery store in Rancho Cucamonga, California, 9456 Robert Street. The website is vivalavegangrocery.com, and you can order anything online that you see at Viva La Vegan. If you want 4 organic tomatoes, they will send them to you. There are over 6,000 items, each and every single one of them vegan. So, and all the vegan meats, all the alternatives. So if you want your burgers and hot dogs and ice cream and yogurt, you know, you don't have to have it with gelatin. You can go to Viva La Vegan again, click shop online, and whatever you want organic produce, you want whatever's there, they'll ship it to you. They also have vegan produce, no animal products used in the growth, so pretty good stuff from Viva La Vegan Grocery. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. You can support the program with a donation. We have hundreds of free archives available at the website, which is goveganradio.com.
Hello, it's Tom Chenault from The Tom Chenault Show. We are experts in home-based business and residual income. We show people how to make money from their home, either part-time or full-time. And in partnership with Genesis Communication Network, we've organized a team to fight back about people not having money, time, or health. And we need your help. What we want you to do is, if you've got an interest in building an organization to fight back against people taking our money, taking our time, and taking our health, we want to talk to you. All you need to do is call this number, 855-308-8326, and ask for Mike Hayes. Again, all you want to do is call Mike Hayes at 855-308-8326. You can make a tremendous amount of money and end up fighting for a great cause. Please call us right now.
Once again, it's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. It is our second hour. Our program has expanded to 2 hours since joining the Genesis Communications Network for national syndication. After broadcasting for 12 years, as heard on Air America and CBS and Clear Channel radio stations, we're so happy to have you with us today to talk about the most important thing you can do, which is to go vegan. My next guest went vegan a while ago. It seems to have worked very well for him. Dr. Ellsworth Wareham was the chief of cardiac surgery for 25 years at Loma Linda. Chief of cardiac surgery. And Dr. Wareham will celebrate his 99th birthday on October 3rd. And welcome to Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. How are you today, Dr. Wareham?
Well, I'm fine. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks for being with us. So, well, you're somebody who would know about heart disease, heart surgery, veganism very well. You yourself have been vegan now for how long of your 98 years?
I suppose probably 40 years, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember. Somewhere in midlife I went that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what made you do that? What was the motivation for that at the time?
Well, I grew up on a farm. I milked cows and took care of chickens and looked after the stock. And my father used to select one of the prime animals, and he would have it butchered, and we would have the meat from this animal. And, of course, whenever this meat was served, I was thinking about this lovely calf that I had known and taken care of and fed. And it just didn't appeal to me to take the life of the animal for me to eat. I milked the cows, and I didn't feel it was the most hygienic procedure in the world. So I was never very fond of milk. I never drink milk but a glass, and eggs I didn't find particularly appetizing either. I never did eat eggs as such. My mother used them in the cooking, but to eat them, you know, as just a food in itself, I never did do that.
Hmm. Well, that's very fortunate that you would come from a background like that.
It was not too far back. Let us say you go back 50 years ago, and the general consensus of opinion then was that unless you ate meat, or at least was a lacto-ovo vegetarianism, you wouldn't get enough protein, and also you wouldn't get the essential amino acids of protein. And it was a while before people became enlightened and came to realize that you could get all the essential elements you need in your diet from vegetables, except perhaps vitamin B12. And so anyhow, when I found out that I didn't need to use animal products and maintain a good nutrition, why, I became vegan.
Hmm. And here you are at age 98, and in good health right now?
Yes, I've been very fortunate in my health. It's not only that I'm alive, but I don't have any health problems, any aches or pains of any kind. So I feel very fortunate that way.
Hmm.
And I've never had to have any joints replaced, you know. A lot of my colleagues have had knee replaced and hips replaced, multiple joint, you know, operations. But I've never had anything like that.
So you're fine, no aches and pains, you're doing great.
That's right. Incidentally, I was in a severe automobile accident and had my spine crushed. I suppose that was 40 years ago or so. And have a collapsed vertebra. But I've never had any symptoms from it.
Hmm.
So I have reason because of the accident to have back pain. But I that's one thing I never have is any back pain of any kind.
Hmm. And you've been vegan somewhere around 40 to 50 years, it sounds like.
At this about point. Half my life, right.
Yeah, oh, terrific. And then you also get to see the other side of it. I mean, you know, if...
As a doctor, I specialized in cardiac surgery. I was a cardiothoracic surgeon. Cardiac surgery came in, open heart surgery, came in as I was finishing my residency training in New York in 1953. And I could see that this was going to be a very prominent field in cardiac surgery. So I extended my training to get training in open heart surgery. And to begin with, we did mostly valve surgery and children's surgery, where the children had congenital heart problems, you know, holes in the septa of the heart or malformation of the valves in children, and rheumatic heart disease in adults and older children. But then along after 1970, the big switch then was to doing coronary artery surgery. And so then for the next 30 years or so, that's what I did, was coronary artery surgery. And we did thousands of them, you know. So I got the chance to see the ravages of arteriosclerosis and what comes from a high cholesterol and the bad effects on the heart from that.
From meat, dairy, fish, and eggs. And you started the open heart program at Loma Linda then?
Yes, I did. I came back in 55, and I started it then, and that's when most programs started. It was in 1955. Mm-hmm. Between 1953 and 55, for a while, the heart-lung machine was not used because the mortality was a little high, and they thought that the heart-lung machine was at fault. But by 1955, those things had been solved and worked out, so heart surgery as such, using the heart-lung machine, got its real impetus in 1954-55.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Dr. Ellsworth Wareham. He is 98 years young, and will have to celebrate your 99th birthday on October 3rd. And so... You live in you're in Loma Linda.
Yes, I live right in Loma Linda, and all my professional life I spent at Loma Linda.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's considered a blue zone for some reason. There's a longevity there. There's an Adventist health study.
Yes, Buettner made his study, I guess, as you know, of the places in the world where people live the longest. Those were Okinawa, Sardinia, Costa Rica, Loma Linda. And the reason why Loma Linda got into this was that Dr. Fraser from the Department of Public Health wrote a paper in 2001 of a study that he made of Adventists comparing their longevity to the general population of California. And this received quite a bit of publicity. The Harvard people picked it up and put it in their publications. They have a Men's Health Watch, a journal put out for men, give health advice and so forth. So the paper got quite a bit of publicity. And since it was a study of 34,000 people, it was a sufficient size, so it scientifically was valid. And they found out that an Adventist male would outlive a male in the general population in California by 9.5 years. Now, that's a pretty good length of time. Mm-hmm. A woman, it's only 6.1 years. they live longer, and the disparity between what the Adventist women's age was and those of the general population, the difference was not as great as you can see. Mm-hmm. But this is the reason why Loma Linda came to the fore. Now, Loma Linda just happens to have a concentration of Adventists. There are about 22,000 people live in Loma Linda, and about half of them are Adventists. But the study was really for California, and it should have been Adventists of California. That's what the study should have. That's what it should have been reported. But Loma Linda is a typical sample of that 34,000.
And the longevity is attributed to diet.
Now, the vegetarians, now, Fraser broke down the lifestyle habits of the people in his study so that he can tell, you can tell in his study what a difference it makes if a person, for example, had smoked or if a person didn't exercise. Or even eating nuts. It is found that a person ate a handful of nuts once a day, that he lived 2.5 years longer than the people that didn't.
Oh, okay. I don't want the music to drown that out. Eat a handful of nuts a day, and you live 2.5 years longer. So said Dr. Ellsworth Wareham. We have to take a break, Dr. Wareham. We will be back in just a few minutes. We'll continue our discussion with our 98-year-old vegan friend. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, GoVeganRadio.com. Thank you for listening. We greatly appreciate it. We give you all the reasons, I mean, especially if you just heard the good doctor just now, Dr. Wareham, who's 98 years old, and he tells you to go vegan, you're convinced. And now what do I eat, right? Well, we give you suggestions, including Vegetarian House, a wonderful vegan restaurant in San Jose. I expect to be there within a few days myself. I love it so much, that international menu. Check out the menu at vegetarianhouse.us. It's at 520 East Santa Clara Street, a landmark there for over 15 years, 100% vegan, organic, non-GMO. You will love it. I'm looking forward to trying the firecracker, the new spicy dish that everybody's talking about at Vegetarian House. So hope to see you there, Vegetarian House, vegetarianhouse.us. Well, earlier today on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, we spoke to Amy Meyer, who is the first person arrested under this new set of unconstitutional laws, the ag-gag laws. There's a model for that from ALEC, American Legislative Exchange Committee, which also is part of the model for the Stand Your Ground, all of these corporations responsible for even the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act. So if you somehow injure the profits of a so-called animal enterprise, you're labeled a terrorist. I've been arrested 6 or 7 times right now myself just for speaking out against animal cruelty. And you know, sometimes animal advocates feel paranoid, but I think we've been vindicated in knowing there's reason to be paranoid. Where are our constitutional rights? What's happening here? We're being spied upon, and what do we do? Well, I do want to spend a few moments now with Shahid Buttar. He is the executive director of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee and the People's Campaign for the Constitution. Welcome, Shahid. How are you today?
Thanks so much for having me on, Bob.
Thanks for being with us. Well, what are we to do, those of us who are concerned about the Constitution and our rights. We see them, you know, we see our liberal Democratic president pushing for indefinite military detention without representation. I mean, what's happening here? What are we to do? What's the extent of it, and what can we do?
There certainly is a very grave problem confronting American democracy, and your right to seize on the co-optation, let's say, of the Obama administration by the Bush administration's agenda and the continuation of the Bush paradigm, even under its successor, indicates not only that the corporate bipartisan establishment favors essentially un-American policies despite the oaths of office that all of our members of Congress swear to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. It also suggests a crisis for democracy in two dimensions. Not only are we losing our most fundamental rights, like the right to speak or assemble or the right to due process, but in addition to losing our most fundamental rights, we also see the one set of issues that do actually bring together diverse Americans across our partisan divisions, that is to say civil liberties, those same fundamental rights that Americans agree on are the same rights that our members of Congress disagree about, right? Which is to say, the one thing that could bring the American people together is the one set of issues that members of Congress are committed to oppose. And the aggrandizement of the executive branch under each of the last two administrations, under congressional leadership from each of the two major parties, certainly spells a crisis for democracy. But having said all that, there are a lot of things your listeners could do, and I'm happy to talk about that.
Please.
You know, the fundamental root of solutions to any of our social ills, quite frankly, lies in grassroots organizing. And it might seem on civil liberties issues that the kinds of local organizing that people say in the animal rights movement or the environmental movement or other movements are engaged in might not work. I hear this a lot because people think, for instance, that civil liberties are only dealt with in Washington, right? Congress is the one calling the shots. The federal agencies are the ones that are off the rails. So there's not a lot we the people can do. That's actually not true, because in the civil liberties context, as in any other policy area, all politics are ultimately local, and the opportunity to address civil liberties issues, not just in Washington, but in our city councils and in our state legislatures, is one that, quite frankly, not enough communities have embraced. And I'll give you some examples. Earlier this year, Texas became the second state. Became the second state in the country after Idaho to, at the state layer, limit the use of domestic surveillance drones by law enforcement agencies, which is to say, with respect to drone surveillance, Texas and Idaho are the most liberal states in the country. And that might be very striking to people, but it makes some sense, right, insofar as those are states with partisan leanings that would tend to oppose the presidential administration. But because members of both parties in both Congress and the White House are committed to aggrandizing the executive branch and undermining constitutional rights, it doesn't really matter where you live. The opportunity to use local governments as a check and balance on federal abuses is huge. And we've seen this time and again, for instance, in the immigration rights context with respect to issues like racial profiling and most recently with respect to surveillance.
Well, and surveillance certainly interests us. You know, it's interesting because our so-called leaders are supposed to take an oath of office, you know, that's a pledge to the Constitution, to protect the Constitution. And, you know, immediately, you know, Pelosi said, you know, impeachment is off the table, yet she supports NSA spying. I mean, when is somebody actually a traitor? I know it's a very, you know, it's like a troubling word, but what's happening here when, you know, look at the Fourth Amendment rights, our rights to free speech, Bradley Manning. I mean, it just goes on, and you feel like they're just shredding the Constitution. Like, can we make a citizen's arrest? What, you know, it's just very bizarre to me.
You're right that the rule of law has been flipped on its head, and it's interesting to think about. You know, someone who very recently has been called a traitor and by a lot of people is Edward Snowden. And it does strike me that he, if anyone is a criminal, he is not it, right? I mean, Edward Snowden is someone who revealed criminal action on the part of multiple executive agencies, and I think the members of Congress and especially the congressional committees charged with oversight are quite frankly simply not doing their jobs. And if any of us did our jobs as poorly as do the members of Congress who supposedly oversee the NSA, for instance, or the FBI, we would all be out of work very quickly.
I don't know how my heroes are suddenly the criminals. You know, I don't know what's happened here to me. So
it is. I mean, it's twisted. And you know, to go back to where you started, there's no party to vote for because both the Republicans and the Democrats are up to their necks in these issues, which is why I think civil liberties pose such a crisis for American democracy, because it's not just the case that we have to challenge a particular partisan establishment and enshrine an alternative. Any partisan establishment, it would seem, judging from the course of action of the Obama administration, is part of the problem, which is to say we have to really fundamentally change the process. And that's one reason that the local organizing makes such a difference, because when city councils and where city councils and state legislatures are active in checking and balancing federal abuses, the landscape changes very dramatically. For instance, the Department of Homeland Security has, to the tune of several billions of dollars, $30 billion at least over the last 10 years, created a network of fusion centers around the country. And these are over 70 law enforcement agencies that bring together the state highway patrol, local sheriff's departments, local police departments to essentially conduct intelligence gathering and monitoring on Americans. And that's exactly the kind of thing that local, you don't have to go to Congress to fix that, because local city councils control the police. In Berkeley, California, for instance, where the city council took an affirmative measure and adopted restrictions on intelligence collection by the Berkeley Police Department, there is a very different regime in place than in other places of the country where that hasn't happened. Or similarly, Texas and Idaho are states in which police departments can't use aerial drones the same way that they can, for instance, in California or Massachusetts. And I do think that it's past time to see other states as well take advantage of those opportunities. I should say for your listeners that to the extent these sound like challenging processes, you know, to get a local law or to secure a state-level protection against a rights abuse by your local police department or the state intelligence agencies or law enforcement agencies, I'll just say that the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, the organization that I lead, was founded to support grassroots activists, and we're still here and available to your members to work on these kinds of campaigns. We've worked on over 400 successful municipal campaigns to create local civil rights protections, and those opportunities certainly remain available to us today, and I invite any of your listeners to reach out to us at organizing@BORDC, that's Bill of Rights Defense Committee, BORDC.org.
Wonderful. Okay. Well, you've given us some hope today, because we've all, I mean, especially lately, I mean, it's like, where do you turn? All three branches of government seem compromised at this point. And so you're suggesting the local route, and that we should get in touch with the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, Shahid Buttar. So again, tell us how to get in touch with you. I think this is very, very good advice, very timely.
I appreciate that. It's www.bordc, Bill of Rights Defense Committee.org. And for your listeners who want to get involved in building the civil liberties movement, please drop us a line over email at organizing@bordc.org.
Great. Okay. Well, thanks for being with us today. I'm glad we were able to connect. These issues really are very troubling. People in the vegan and animal liberation movements have been at the forefront. You know, there have been people arrested under this Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act for doing nothing but writing slogans in chalk, or, you know, just for trying to communicate. So,
and not merely arrested, right? I mean, when you're talking about the environmentalists arrested for violating ag gag laws, I mean, you're talking about environmentalists arrested and charged with terror offenses for essentially committing constitutionally protected acts.
Right. We have the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act, which was a Dianne Feinstein, you know, our domestic spy person, who's given us a rotten egg bill. I mean, I don't see a difference between Democrats and Republicans. Yet, like you say, you know, what's the difference with, you know, somebody with a policy like that? Yeah, we're being labeled as terrorists just for trying to do the right thing. So we're in good company. Bradley Manning and Edward Snowden. And all of us together. Let's just hope there's good vegan food when, you know, for indefinite military detention. Thanks for being with us today, Shahid.
My pleasure. Keep up the great work.
Thanks. We'll talk to Lester Friedlander coming up on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. Daisy the Rescue Chihuahua on my lap saying, it's almost time to take me for a walk, isn't it? Yes, a few minutes, baby. I want to thank Kim Sheridan for support for the program, author of the heartwarming book Animals and the Afterlife. You can visit animalsandtheafterlife.com. Yes, Daisy, just a few minutes. You're getting acupuncture on Tuesday, right, Daisy? Acupuncture for dogs is available in the San Francisco Bay Area at Oceana Pet Hospital, 711 Oceana Boulevard in Pacifica, a full-service animal care facility offering acupuncture therapy. Veterinary acupuncture has been known to stimulate the body's pain-relieving and anti-inflammatory mechanisms, and it's been used in traditional Chinese medicine and for many thousands of years, and it's available for you to... Daisy! It's available to you at the Oceana Pet Hospital, which is AHA accredited, open 7 days a week at 711 Oceana Boulevard, Pacifica. The phone number, 650-355-6600. Its owner and primary veterinarian, Dr. Nia, DVM, PhD, completed the acupuncture course of the International Veterinary Acupuncture Society. Go to oceanapet.com. The Rotten Egg Bill I was talking about before. Go to stoptherottenegbill.com. And we have our own staff veterinarian. We have just a few minutes today to talk to Dr. Lester Friedlander, DVM, who is the former USDA meat and slaughterhouse inspector, turned Go Vegan Radio whistleblower. And Dr. Friedlander, you are you want people to kind of vote for you for one of the openings on the executive committee on the Wild Horses and Burros Committee?
Yes. There's now presently there's three openings on Bureau Land Management Executive Committee of Wild Horses and Burros. These are non-paying positions. They're 3 years appointment, and I am right now getting my resume together, and I'm going to be submitting it to the Bureau of Land Management in Washington, D.C.
So that would make you an advisor to the Secretary of the Interior, who is now Sally Jewell.
Yes.
Okay.
The Executive Committee of the Wild Horses and Burros meets at least twice a year, and they will make recommendations to the Secretary of Interior about the welfare, the health, and the care of the wild horses and burros.
And what will you advise her? What does she need to do? Why should do people help you to that position?
Well, they can nominate me by going to the Bureau of Land Management Executive Committee of Wild Horses and Burros and nominate Dr. Lester Castro Friedlander. Hopefully, if I get on that committee, I'd like to see changes. Especially the wild horses and burros are located in the long-term and short-term holding facilities have no shade in most of them. The one I'm talking about is the largest one. It's located in Sparks, Nevada. That's Palomino Valley. They have almost 2,000 wild horses and burros there, and there's no shade at all. Unfortunately, what happened in the last week, at least three, I think possibly four horses have died at that facility. Unfortunately, again, the Bureau of Land Management, who says they have veterinarians there to check on the horses' health, never did a necropsy to determine the death of those horses, mm-hmm. which I find, you know, incredible because, you know, it's important, you know, when an animal dies, to actually find out what the cause of death is, especially when you talk about a herd well, you have 2,000 horses. I mean, you know, could have been from something like poisoning, could have been from the moldy hay that, you know, that they have stacked up there, you know, and they didn't do a necropsy.
We have about a minute left, so I'd like
okay.
to...
Also, I just wanted to say something also that disturbed me a little bit was the lady, Jane Velez Mitchell from CNN interviewed Wayne Pacell. He was the CEO of the HSUS, Maine Society of the United States. And he made a statement about the wild horses and burros that he believes that they should be sterilized.
Okay.
I firmly disagree with that.
Okay. Well, we'll pick up with your disagreement with Wayne Pacelli of the Humane Society of the United States on next week's program. We'll talk again with Dr. Lester Friedlander. If you missed any of our program, we are archived at goveganradio.com. A little over.